chilling. I haven't eaten in almost 2 days.
You need help! You're a sick man!
I'm a sick man.
Okay, hold on. Which way? Wheel now. Wheel.
Dude, you fucked it, man. I sat on here for like 2 hours and shit. I was 12.
Listen to daddy. I want you to take the gun and I want you to put it in your mouth. And I want you to blow your brains out.
No!
Blow your brains out! Blow your...
This is Disturbing Cinema, a podcast in which we discuss and dissect films considered to be disturbing or have a disturbing reputation. I am JP, one of your three hosts podcasting out of Southwest PA. I am, of course, a podcaster. I make videos on YouTube, and I'm just an all-around horror fan. And joining me tonight, first, let me intro my number one homie, Mood616 out of BC, Canada. What up?
Yeah, yeah. Representing PGBC. Y'all know me. I'm the MOOD to the Z.
Yeah. Try to follow
that. What's going on, JP?
What's up, man? How you doing? We're doing something different now, huh?
Yeah, man. I'm really excited about this. And I have to say, it's very strange. Me not talking off the top of the show.
Yeah, I felt a little weird myself.
I was literally sitting back in my chair with my back actually touching the back of the chair. And I was like, oh, this is cool, man. You know, I'm not that alpha male. I don't have to be in charge all the time. You know, so this is cool. This is fun.
Absolutely. So yeah. One of the things that I wanted to do is because we probably will have a similar audience to the one that is the 22 Shots audience, but I'm sure we'll pick up a lot of new people. So go ahead and tell people who you are, what you do, and where they can find you.
Of course, I'm mostly known as Moods. I do throw in the 616 once in a while, but of course that is my YouTube name, Mood616. So you can find me over on the YouTube interwaves. Yeah, check me out on there. My channel's it's a decent size if you've never heard of me.
I hear you host a podcast. Is that true?
And yes, and I'm getting there. I also host another podcast called the 22 Shots of Moods and Horror. Of course, that would be strange if I didn't, since my name is in the title. You know, that was never planned. That was never designed. But yeah, you can mostly find me on there, my YouTube channel. Of course, you can follow me on Twitter, Mood616, and Instagram, Mood616. Everything is just Mood616. I make it so easy, so... yeah, you can find me all over the place.
All right. Simple. So then we have the third host here, and I can't forget him. His name is The Horrorphile, a.k.a. Kyle, podcasting out of South Carolina.
Yo, yo, yo. What is up, guys? Yeah, so actually upstate South Carolina.
Yeah, you always correct me on that. I have no idea what the difference is.
I don't know why.
That's just confusing. Upstate South?
Yeah, I know, right? It's kind of weird. Like, I always correct people on that because it's where, I don't know.
You have some beef with, like, the north side of California.
South Carolina is one of those things where everybody that lives here, they either live in upstate, they live in Charleston, like, near the beach, or they live, like, in the middle of South Carolina where Columbia is, like, where the capital is. So, I don't know. Upstate, I live in a town called Anderson, which is pretty much on the border of Georgia. So, and I also do have a YouTube channel. My name is The Horrorphile on YouTube, which on my channel, I kind of do similar things to this podcast. I have a Disturbing Movies series. I do a Video Nasty series. I just do general reviews on some horror movies. And also I do have an Instagram as well. Actually, I have two Instagrams. I have my personal one and I have my Horrorphile one, but I'm at The Horrorphile on Instagram if you guys want to follow. Basically, only thing on Instagram I do with my at The Horrorphile is I post just random posters of movies. Yeah, I post a bunch of black dick pics of myself. I actually just post movie posters of movies that I watch. Like, if I'm watching a movie and I get bored, I'll just post a poster. So, but other than that, yeah, check me out.
Yeah,
so.
Otherwise he's saying he's boring as hell. But exactly. No, seriously, Kyle's an awesome YouTuber. And honestly, one of the people that I like to pull into podcasting, me and Moods, we pulled him in because we thought he was a decent person and fun to work with. And that's why we came up with this little brainchild, which kind of segues into the next little thing that I want to discuss. And that's actually what we're doing. And this this thing is an interesting concept. I think it mainly came from Kyle, actually. It's basically, we're going to take one film that is considered to be disturbing by the horror community or horror fans. I'm not saying that it is disturbing, it's just considered to be disturbing. And then what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the film, we're going to review the film, and then we're going to discuss and dissect whether it is or it isn't disturbing, and we're going to kind of break down why or why not. Kyle, actually, why did we choose to do this? Because this is your idea.
I think this idea, I've always been interested in kind of extreme movies, I guess.
He's just trying to fit in and be like cool and stuff. He's like,
yeah, he's like a horror hipster.
I don't want to do anything lame, like doing reviews from 1981 or 1988 or anything. He's like, I just want to focus on, you know, the disturbing films, because that's where all the cool kids are.
I'm trying to be very edgy, as they say, moods. Very, very edgy. So, I enjoy these types of movies. These, like, extreme type movies. I've always enjoyed them. I remember one of the first extreme movies I ever watched, which was a long, long time ago, was August Underground's Mortem, which is, you know, back in the day, if you see that when you're, like, in ninth grade and you're
in school. Start with that one? You watched the middle film in the trilogy?
Yeah, that was the first extreme movie I ever watched. I never watched the first August Underground. I watched Mortem, which is kind of weird, but I remember watching it.
It's a good start, man. You know, if you're semi-interested in, you know, in disturbing films and stuff, that's quite the start.
You know what? I'm going to interject here. That was actually my start too, but it wasn't the middle of the trilogy. It was the first film. I had heard about the August Underground films, and actually I heard about Mortem. Everybody always said August Underground Mortem, August Underground Mortem. And yeah. I couldn't find that one online, and I found the regular August Underground, and I watched that. Before that, the previous most disturbing thing I ever seen was like The Devil's Rejects. So, I mean, it was really kind of jumping
into the deep side. Going straight into Mortem. Like, I mean, I remember whenever I was in ninth grade, in high school, and I remember going online and dial-up days. This was dial-up days, guys. Looking up what the most disturbing movie, what the most disturbing movies out there are. I remember I saw Mortem, August Underground Mortem. I went and bought that movie. I ordered it offline. It came. I watched it. I was like, wow, this is pretty fucked. I remember like halfway through the movie, I was just like, I was in ninth grade. I was just kind of like, wow, this is a lot to take in when you haven't seen these type of movies before, especially if that's the first movie. And then I remember seeing Cannibal Holocaust shortly after that. I went and bought that and just kind of blossomed from there. I've always been like very interested in these type of movies. I'm a huge horror fan, and a lot of these movies fit well within that genre. Plus, there's going to be other genres we're going to be doing that are considered disturbing, not just horror. That's kind of where this podcast kind of took place. I mean, I do a disturbing movies series on my channel where basically I just review movies that are considered by some as being quote unquote disturbing or, you know, extreme. So I just kind of thought it'd be really cool to do a podcast on these type of films. I mean, this is a very interesting type of genre, what people, you know, get kind of shocked
by. It generally seems that people are constantly Googling the most disturbing film, or what films, you know, most messed up film, most extreme film, you know, sick, twisted, fuck film. Some, like, it seems like people are really interested in it. So when you came to me with that idea for a podcast, I was like, yeah, that sounds great, actually. And of course, we had to bring Moods in because his, you know, opinion on things really definitely adds to the conversation.
Yeah, I like this whole theme of, is it disturbing? You know, is it not disturbing? I like this whole thing, you know, just to, you know, get everyone on the same page here. You know, we're not trying to be hipsters or anything and kind of jump on this whole disturbing cinema, you know, wave that's kind of going through with everybody in the communities and things like that. We're here mostly to kind of interject and just give honest opinions and to prove or disprove. And, you know, like I said, give our opinions on disturbing cinema. Is it disturbing or is it not disturbing?
Yeah, right? It's less of a review show. And more of like just the dissection. It's more of just like taking what we're presented with and really looking at it in detail and kind of figure out like what is it that makes these things so appealing or unappealing or, you know, disturbing or not disturbing. Like Kyle mentioned, we're, you know, kind of just doing one movie at a time here. So one episode, one movie. We won't be doing any type of franchises with five movies in an episode or something.
Yeah.
These won't be too long. Either.
Exactly. If anyone's familiar with the 22 Shots podcast, it'll be nothing like that.
pretty much.
One film, you know, dissecting it, completely different format. So, yeah. So if you're expecting something like that, no, it's not going to happen. This is one film. It's like a one night only. type thing. So
absolutely.
One and done.
Another thing behind the way we're going to actually do these is we're not going to do them week to week. This show might be weekly or biweekly when you actually hear it. But all of the first season will probably have been recorded, or will maybe we'll do like a pilot thing or something. So in case you're asking us, you know, say something and then we don't mention it on the next show, it's because they're already pre-recorded. These are not like a weekly format show. And we're doing it in sort of like how a TV show does in seasons. And we already have episodes planned out. I think it's really cool what we have worked out and what we're going to be doing. And we're actually, you know, something that we should mention, because you did mention that we're going to be like dissecting these, and it's going to be very different. And in that, we are going to be spoiling these films. Because it's different. It's not a movie review.
We spent a little bit of time, you know, discussing this, scratching our head and scratching our balls over this, and we thought it was probably in the best interest to do it. You know, because I think the conversations will be a lot better, a little more interesting. I think our opinions can be expressed a lot more, you know, honest, and, you know, without having to beat around the bush, is what I'm saying, you know, with these conversations on the films, and just let everyone know how it is. I mean, these are disturbing films. Let's just throw it at you.
Yeah. Right? And how can you really dissect a movie without kind of spoiling it at some point? So, yeah,
especially when we're asking specific questions like, is it disturbing? And then why? Because you're going to have to display certain scenes that you that are probably in the ending or give away key plot points or something.
Exactly. This first film couldn't have been any better for us to, you know, figure that out with. Was, you know, Martyrs was definitely a film that we discussed, and we just came to the conclusion that we can't really film without spoilers. Like, the conversation, I think, would be so limited to the point where, why not just do it for all the films?
Yeah. Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, so why not, right? So, yeah.
Yes, and one thing that I wanted to ask you guys, like, personally, to you, what makes a film disturbing, or what disturbs you? And, you know, I guess Kyle, you can lead off with that.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much with what I consider, I guess, a quote unquote disturbing film or disturbing cinema would be pretty much a film that has some kind of shock value or shocking visuals. I guess a lot of these movies that we're going to be covering, and a lot of the movies we're going to be doing and that we have planned, I guess it's basically a movie that when you watch, you're kind of not just floored. Floored is kind of the wrong word. You're just kind of surprised by. Like, you go into the movie. A good example of a movie that's kind of like this, which is probably one of the more well-known, I guess, quote unquote, extreme disturbing movies, is a Serbian film. So, you know, and we'll kind of get into that if we ever do that movie. But going into a movie such as, you know, of that nature, maybe, you know, any of these movies, going into those movies and not really knowing much about the plot, you watch it and you're like, wow, these are just a lot. There's just a lot of really, I guess, fucked up aspects to this movie. How could the director even come out with this movie? Another example, Cannibal Holocaust, stuff like that, where, you know, a movie director gets put behind bars or something like that, gets put in prison or jail. That's things like that. Things that can be in a movie that can cause, you know, people to be very, very surprised, or, you know, get anxious, or visuals that are really messed up, or, I guess, key plot points in the actual movie itself that are, you know, very hush-hush, that a lot of people don't talk about. That kind of stuff, to me, can be disturbing to some people. It, honestly, for me, I've seen so many movies that are really just messed up movies. It's really hard to pretty much get me like, oh wow, this was disturbing. But at the same time, some people that go into some of these movies that watch them, they have never seen a movie that's got, you know, certain aspects to it as other movies. So it's really hard to say what some people consider disturbing, what some people consider not. But most of the movies we're going to be covering, and most of what I think or I consider a disturbing film, is movies that tend to go beyond the bounds of most movies, like a movie that you would go to see in a movie theater. These are movies that hit on things that normally other movies wouldn't, you know, have very, very weird and not natural visuals, I guess. So that's kind of where I'm going with that.
And when it comes down, I mean, really, it comes down to, you know, personal opinions, too. Everyone has a different idea of what is disturbing.
It really
to them.
Is very personal.
Everybody's disturbed by different things. You know, like, you know, some people aren't disturbed by animal killings, and other people are completely disturbed by them. So it just depends. For me, personally, man, it's very simple for me. It's realism. That's what disturbs me. It's realism. It's any film that depicts a realistic situation that I believe in my heart they could totally happen. That shit scares the shit out of me, and I find that very disturbing. Like, I've said this many, many times, whether it be on my channel or reviewing films on body bags, or it's, you know, on the podcast, I've stated many times that I find home invasion to be fucking terrifying, because that is like, it's one of those things where, you know, you feel comfortable in your house. You never really think of it. And then, you know, if someone was to invade you and, you know, and violate you and do things like that, like, I mean, that's realistic. It happens, right? Yeah. That shit's scary. It's fucking terrible. And like, and it's the simple fact of you can't do anything about it. If someone just broke into your house, if someone broke into my house right now, it would be crazy. Like, I'm not prepared for it.
Yeah. And I know, especially it definitely probably changes once you have, you know, a kid. Like, that becomes your biggest fear at that point.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just those realistic situations. Like, you know, like I always say, man, you know, home invasion films, they always do it for me. You know, I just find them terrifying because it could really happen to anybody at any moment. You know, like slasher films. No, I don't find, you know, a lot of slasher films are not disturbing because, I mean, they're theoretically, you know, not realistic. I mean, let's face it. Yeah. Come on. These things are probably not going to go down like this. But
you're telling me Jason can't come back to life a bunch of times?
Exactly. But, you know, home invasion, I mean, we know it happens. It definitely does happen. These things happen. I mean, look at The Strangers. It's based on true events. I mean, obviously, there's things in the film that have been depicted, you know, just for cinema, too. But, you know, things like that. But, yeah, it's definitely – it's realism, man. I just find it to be – it's terrifying. And that's the scariest thing about this world that we live in, is that we live in a scary fucking world. You know, and a lot of these films, they're almost an escape from it sometimes. So I don't find it very disturbing, you know. I have a funny story about Cannibal Holocaust, Kyle. The first time I seen Cannibal Holocaust, you know, I always heard, you know, it was like, it was the craziest movie. It's so crazy and stuff. And I remember watching on a bootleg VHS way back in the day and not knowing, but I had actually watched a cut version. Like, it actually had the animal killings cut out of it and stuff. So that was my first introduction to Cannibal Holocaust. And I was like, you know, it wasn't really that bad. You know, like I wasn't like, okay, you know, I was like, okay, you know, there were some moments in the film where the effects were really good. You know, like the part where, you know, the scene where Ruggero Deodato actually went to jail because they thought the girl hanging on the pole was fucking real.
Yeah.
They had to prove that wasn't real. So, you know, when I was younger, I was like, damn, that actually is pretty real looking. Years later, I saw the uncut version. I was actually disturbed because real animal killings to me like that, you know, and not really knowing the whole history behind Cannibal Holocaust, because like the killings and stuff that happened in that film, you know, those animals were later eaten by those real tribes that they were filming. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's just a way of life for them. But we don't know that when we're first watching that. So I'm seeing animal killings by these white people and stuff. I'm like, what the fuck? I'm like, no, thank you. You can fucking sign me out of this one right now. You know, even when I watch Cannibal Holocaust now, I always think about that. I do find it a little disturbing, animal killings and things like that, but just thought I'd throw a little note.
That's actually a really good point, because there's actually a movie out there that's, and you guys, I don't know if you guys have heard of it or not, but it's similar to kind of what you're talking about. It's called Earthlings. It's like, I think it's a documentary. I think it's hosted by Joaquin Phoenix, and it's like a movie.
Wait, what?
It's called Earthlings.
Who's it hosted by?
Joaquin
Phoenix.
He said Yockling.
Yockling, whatever his name is. Whatever the fuck this dude's name. The dude with the cleft lip. You know what I'm talking about. So
people in Hollywood.
Yeah, exactly. So, and it's actually like a basically like a documentary on him going around to animal, like, I guess, were they like basically cut up animals to make the meat, like pigs and, you know, chicken and stuff like that. Butcher. You know what I'm talking about, where they would basically kill them and make them into meat. And something like that. Yeah, animal killings to me, I'm the same way. Like, I feel like animal killings to me is disturbing when you see an actual animal be killed. I mean, it's a human, and not a human, but obviously it's an animal life. It's life, and you see it, you know, dying in front of you. So that's very, very disturbing. And yeah, I mean, Cannibal Holocaust. I mean, I think it's funny how the Grindhouse release of that has the animal free killing version and has the animal killing version of it that you can play. But yeah, man, like anything that's realistic like that, and also another thing, manipulation. Like a lot of these disturbing flicks or these extreme flicks, I've noticed they have a lot of manipulation behind them, like a person manipulating another person or making them do something that they normally wouldn't do. That's kind of disturbing because that can happen. Like they could
yeah
somebody did something. You know what I mean?
A prime example of, you know, is, or being forced into things and stuff like that. And like A Girl Next Door, you know, that whole situation. And the thing for me about that film is that, you know, it's the time period it takes place in too. You know, the '50s are supposed to be this nice, cozy, like white picket fence type era. And that's where that story takes place.
Yeah.
You know, is
that's
in this
my thunder. That's my thunder right there. I always go into that, like how it's set in the '50s. You just stole my thunder.
Well, because you don't. Because you don't really think of. Yeah, sorry.
No, but, I'm joking. You feel
it's
the
a
same
good one.
Way. I know.
It's a really good one because it's disturbing in the fact you're thinking like this white
Leave It to Beaver style. You know, just
yeah,
Pleasantville.
Yeah, it's like this white collar neighborhood. You know, it's upper class. You know, white picket fences. Like these type of situations shouldn't be happening. It's happening to real people, and it did. And that is sick shit, man. Humans are the sickest and most vile things on the face of the earth, and just the realism in it is just enough to make me sick. So
yeah. It's kind of like another thing that I know we were kind of going off tangent on some of this, but another thing that comes to mind is a lot of these movies have rape in them too, which that's one of those things that a lot of people, you know, you see it on film with certain things and you're like, oh, that's obviously fake. But some people consider, like, I know a lot of people, you say the word rape and they're like, oh, whoa, yo, don't say that around me, or I don't want to think about that. And a lot of the films that we're going to be covering do have that in it as well. So that's another something else that can be considered disturbing, a big aspect to disturbing cinema or disturbing film. So I mean, before we get off on like a tangent, I mean, what about you, JP? What do you think?
Oh, well, thanks guys for giving me the opportunity to speak.
But, I know, right?
Me personally, you guys touched on all of the key factors really, but Kyle mentioned it very briefly early on. And to me personally, when I think of like one singular thing that it is, it's boundaries. It's going beyond what you find, you know, acceptable, or not even acceptable, but, you know, there's a difference between Jason walking up to somebody and slashing them down, right? It's very simple. It doesn't feel that personal. But when it's stretched out and you're going beyond and it's becoming more of a personal thing, or it's a total disregard for humans or, you know, your fellow man, that's when it becomes disturbing to me, because it's no longer this just simple, you know, like if somebody just shoots somebody, it's one and done, but it's almost, there's more. It's just pushing it further and further. And as that line goes further, as you stretch it further, that's when I think it becomes more and more disturbing. That's why rape, most of the time is disturbing, is because it does feel very personal, because there's no way for it to not be usually, you know, it's often a thing of, it's not often a just sexual thing. It's a power thing. That's why it's disturbing. Different torturous things, because torture becomes very personal, and the boundaries and the realism. Moods killed it with that, because I think that's what it really comes down to. If it's slapsticky, like in, you know, Gutter Balls, it's not as disturbing. Like, yeah, it's a little bit because of the image that you're seeing, but at the end of the day, when it's played serious, that's when it has the most emotional effect on me personally. Stuff like The Girl Next Door, where it's just brutal. How can you do this to other people? That's what's disturbing to me, is just the disregard for, you know, your fellow man.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. Using another human being, you know, to further your knowledge of something, you know, that's disturbing, because it's very selfish and it's wrong, you know, given the circumstances. But we'll get into that in a minute.
Yeah.
Actually, good way to like segue into that. The film we're actually talking about tonight, I believe you mentioned it earlier, is probably the one that I've heard most in terms of the brought up in disturbing film talk. And that film is Martyrs from the year 2008, directed by Pascal Lugier.
It's a French name. It's hard to, I'm so bad with names.
Yeah, so is this a French Canadian film or an actual French film?
It's a French Canadian film. It's funded by France, and I believe, well, it's fully shot in Quebec in Canada. So it's a France Canada film, but
it's a co-production. It's a French Canadian / French production.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so one thing that I did want to kind of just do in these shows is also just, you know, briefly touch on the director. Has he done anything else? Me and Kyle kind of do this in our TV show podcasts, but this guy It seems to me that the only thing he's really done besides this is he directed The Tall Man with Jessica Biel, which
he did House of Voices.
Oh, was that good? Did you see it?
Yeah, I own it. House of Voices is a really, really strange film. It's one of those films that I need to rewatch because the first time I watched it, I honestly didn't really feel it too much, but I knew that it has something there. It's strange. It's nothing like Martyrs. It's nothing. I mean, Martyrs is a little, you know, it has its own moments, but this one is like almost like psychologically strange. So, yeah,
interesting.
To the point
he
where
made
it's
a lot more on it than he did Martyrs.
Yeah, House of Voices. Yeah, it must have had some type of following or whatever. I mean, it's been a few years since I've watched it, so I gotta check it out again. It's a weird one though.
Yeah. So he hasn't really done much else besides that.
Have you guys seen The Tall Man?
No, I haven't seen any other movie that he's done other than Martyrs.
Okay.
I own it, but I haven't watched it.
The Tall Man never really interested me at all.
I hear it's not even like a horror film at all.
Yeah, I've heard the same thing. So, I mean, it would be cool if it was actually about the Tall Man.
He sure did lose a lot of money on the Tall Man. It says here that the budget for that movie was 18 mil, and he only made 5 mil off of it.
Oh, yikes. Wow, really? Crazy. Yeah, because that was his first like American product, like it was an American.
It still says it was a Canadian and French mystery horror movie. So,
oh, yeah. Really? That was Canadian. Oh, okay, interesting.
So, Martyrs is actually, you know, just to get into the history of it a little bit, and to kind of get into like its reputation, because that's kind of part of this. So, the film was part of the new era French horror films. You know, Jeremy would be proud that we're talking about it. What that basically was sort of this new wave of films that were coming out of France and I guess co-productions with Canada, that, you know, were kind of on another level of violence and extreme factors. Martyrs is the one that I remember hearing about most. I remember the first time I heard about Martyrs, it was on YouTube. I was watching these two guys who used to sit there, and they had like a show. I don't remember the name. I don't remember who they were. I know one of them's name was like something Voorhees, and the other one's was like something Myers. They had the whole shtick going, and they were asked. They did a little segment where kind of like how we do on the podcast, Moods of 22 Shots, where they were asked a question like, "What's the most messed up film you ever seen?" And Martyrs was one that I think they talked about a lot. So I always heard about this Martyrs movie, but I never knew what it was really about. I was able to manage to stay away from all the spoilers and stuff for many years, because this was actually my first time viewing this film, but I'd always heard of the reputation of it based on all the YouTube circles that would talk. And I remember when these films came out, when the Martyrs and the High Tensions and the Frontiers and all these films from France were coming in. And honestly, if I'm 100% honest, looking back on it, the general like American audience was very resistant to these films. They lumped them in with Hostel. They didn't like them. Now I've seen a complete change. These films are respected. These films are talked about. It's almost like at first there was a resistance and it was wrong to like these films, and now it seems like just normal. Like everybody likes them. But I remember there was a huge resistance to these like quote unquote torture porn films.
Yeah, that's where the name pretty much came. The torture porn name kind of came about was a lot of these films. And yeah, it's the new French extremity movement is what they call it. I remember you said the first one that you heard was Martyrs. The first one I ever heard was High Tension. I remember when that movie
came out
I was
a little
like,
bit earlier than Martyrs.
Yeah,
that movie had a lot of you know, backing behind it when it first came out. So
yeah, that movie was out quite a bit earlier. I think it, like in France, it came out, 2003? Never made its way over here until...
Yeah, it was till 2005, I believe, but I think it did a lot of the festival circuits, like the directors and stuff, where always at like similar different film festivals with Martyrs and Inside and all those different films, I believe, throughout the years. So it kind of, they got lumped in together.
And I do believe Martyrs was the last one of that, like, you know, that Fab Five type collection,
deal, yeah.
Collection of French extreme horror films, you know, to actually come out, which is pretty interesting because it was 2008, right?
Yeah.
The Martyrs came out in, which is, yeah, I think it was the last of, because I think Inside and Them came out in 06 and stuff like that. So
Yeah, I think it's funny. The only thing holding high tension from an R rating to an NC-17 rating was 3 minutes of the movie. I think that's pretty funny. But I remember, like, speaking of, like, the new French extreme movement, I remember seeing high tension everywhere when it first came out, or, like, around the time, within the first couple of years it came out. I saw that movie being, like, I saw it in, like, all the video stores. I remember seeing it, like, being sold everywhere. I just remember the cover of that movie, like, everywhere, and I really didn't know what it was at first, and I was like, let me check this out. And I remember seeing it, and I was like, wow, this is some pretty rough stuff. It was like around the time I was like about to graduate high school. I was like, damn, this is pretty crazy. And I didn't really know what the extreme French movement was. I don't even think the extreme French movement was a thing when that movie came out. I think it didn't start. They didn't start like talking about that until later on after a couple of those movies came out. But yeah, I mean, that was the first one. That's kind of funny that Martyrs was your first. The High Tension, I remember that one back in the day, was a pretty big one when it first came out. So.
Mm-hmm. What was your first experience hearing about Martyrs, Mids?
Well, I mean, being it like a Canadian production, I remember when it actually got released here, I believe in 08. Was it 08 or 09? I can't remember. But I hadn't really heard too much about it. I actually came across it randomly. And I was talking to this guy that used to work in basically media store I used to shop at, you know, back in those days when we actually had a little more, you know, to shop at. He was quite knowledgeable and stuff like that. And I was, you know, in there buying movies and stuff. And he's like, you know, have you seen this movie? He literally asked me if I'd seen Martyrs. And I'll never forget this conversation actually, because he says to me, and I'm like, no, I haven't seen it yet. And, he goes, well, you know, do you like Hostel? Like the first thing he compared it to was Hostel.
Which makes sense.
And I said, yeah, you know, I liked Hostel. And he goes, well, if you liked Hostel, man, you know, check this out. He says it's a little harder. And I was like, what do you mean harder? He said the word harder, but I was like, okay. So, you know, I purchased it and checked it out. But that was really the first time. It was about the time it came out, I guess, like on media. I had, you know, honestly seen, High Tension and, I guess I didn't see Frontiers until after. I think Frontiers was actually the last one I'd seen. I'd seen them, so yeah.
Inside?
I seen Inside after too.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think Frontiers and Inside were actually the last two I ended up seeing.
So I think the main reason that we picked Martyrs for the first episode, one, we actually had a different film picked for it, but I couldn't get it in time or whatever. But this one was definitely the one actually that I suggested first, and then we kind of moved back to this one. And it's mainly because, like, it really was, like, the first one besides, like, the August Underground films. See, those were different because I heard of those more of, like, a snuff film, like a Faces of Death or something like that. This was, like, the first movie that I kept hearing and fucking hearing over and over again about it. And honestly just wanted to finally see it. But it's also because of its popularity among the people who talk about disturbing films. If you see a disturbing film list, Martyrs is on it. Any Google list that you look at, it's usually there.
Yeah, it's usually within the top 3 or 5 films that are on that list if they're ranked. It's always on everyone's list, like Martyrs, Martyrs, Martyrs. So, yep.
So, with that said, I say we actually give the IMDb description plot.
Pretty much this movie, Martyrs, is about, it says here, the storyline, 15 years after a horrifying experience of abduction and prolonged torture, Lucy embarks on a bloody quest for revenge against her oppressors. Along with her childhood friend, Anna, who also suffered abuse, she quickly descends without hope into madness and her own delusions. Anna, left on her own, begins to re-experience what Lucy did when she was only 12 years old.
That is absolutely, like, the best description for this.
It is. Yeah, and that was actually user-submitted, which is pretty surprising. So.
Yeah, that's a good one, man. Props to that user. What's his name?
It just says his email address. It says it's written by kwedgwood@hotmail.com.
You know what? Yeah, I bet K Wedgwood would love some dick pics, listeners.
I bet y'all need to send him the best dick pics possible. Find the most disturbing, Google images possible and send them to K.
Yeah, like the blue corn dog or something. I'm sure that exists.
It's a good story. Sorry to cut you off. It's a good storyline as long as you're giving spoilers, right? Because if you stopped it, you know, it says without hope into madness and her own delusions. And then, you know, that last line that's in the storyline, you know, giving that, you are stating something right away.
Yeah. That's funny that you noticed that. I was reading that. I didn't even notice that. That's kind of like giving away spoilers.
Yeah. Also, when it says Anna is left on her own to be and begins to re-experience what Lucy did, when that's like a pretty big spoiler as well.
Oh, massive. Like there's two in there.
Yeah. Because I would have never saw that coming. You know, like I obviously this was the first.
I actually, before I read those, I actually pre-read them just to make sure, because I've come across the storylines and stuff that are, what, that's total spoiler right there.
Yeah.
And we don't do it on the 22 shots, so I just wanted to read just the actual meaning of martyr just quickly, just in case somebody by chance.
I'm so glad you did that.
It's actually really short, you know, it's right to the point. A martyr is a person who is put to death or endures suffering because of a belief, principle, or cause. So
Interesting. That's pretty much the sum up of a martyr.
It's like it's almost like a sacrifice, like almost like a Jesus Christ type thing in a little bit.
Yeah, well, I think that's what the Christians they always stated, that Jesus was the first martyr.
Oh, it's a I actually love the word. Like it's like a nice sounding word. Not nice, but I mean, like, I've always kind of liked that word.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I will say this, and something I think is pretty interesting to kind of note, I guess, of the movie, of why it was rated. This movie is unrated if you get it on DVD. It was originally rated R, obviously, for a theatrical release. The reason why it was rated R, it says here, is for disturbing. There's the key word, disturbing. Disturbing / severe aberrant behavior involving strong bloody violence, torture, child abuse, and some nudity.
Jesus Christ.
So, yeah, it's pretty brutal. Like, that's a pretty brutal description of – I'm surprised it even gets an R rating with all that stuff in it. But, yeah, it was released on DVD, and I believe that there's a Blu-ray release that's – I think it's Region 2 or some shit that's, unrated. So – that's the reason why I was rated R. And another little quick trivia knowledge of the movie, the director has stated in the past in interviews that he was inspired by Hostel, but instead of making a movie about suffering, he wanted to make a movie about pain.
Ooh.
So
interesting.
Pretty interesting.
That's kind of like Eli Roth, or you're so simple. You didn't even see that you can elevate this above and beyond.
I think I actually read one time too that the director wrote this movie. Either he was just coming out of depression, like he was super depressed at a time, and he ended up writing this movie. I think while he was depressed, or he was just coming out.
Well,
I can't remember.
Sense. But I don't see how this could make you depressed. Depression.
Well, that's the thing, and I think that's why it's so well. It's just beyond dark.
Yeah.
Right? It's just dark. Because when you're depressed, you don't have any type of, you know, good visions. So, yeah.
So, the one, you know, we can get into this one a little bit. So, it does kind of open up with, you're just kind of introduced into a girl who was obviously tortured. She escaped. And now you're seeing, like, kind of video footage of her kind of befriending another girl at, I guess, what would be like a home, like some sort of a nursery, or not nursery, adoption type thing. I don't know what it's called.
Yeah,
orphanage, maybe.
Orphanage. Like, there you go.
It's an orphanage. It's strange because that she would be befriending her friend at an orphanage, considering she does, like, the one girl, she has a mom. So generally, you're at an orphanage when you're orphaned.
Huh. That's exactly kind of an orphanage. Yeah.
So I was always a little bit confused by the two, where they exactly were, because
maybe it was like a foster home.
Maybe it was like a religious, what do they call, like, the Christian homes, like a religious home, maybe. I don't know.
I mean, it could be due to a lot. It could have been some type of foster. I don't know. Who really knows? But I just always thought that was an interesting note in the film. I remember that the way. But
and you know, shortly after that, it kind of cuts forward. 15 years. And we're introduced to a seemingly normal family. In which there's just a little bit of character development. We're just kind of spending some morning with them. And out of fucking nowhere, you hear a knock on the door, and it just goes like full mayhem.
Haywire. This is actually, in my opinion, one of the more extreme scenes yeah, Lucy, one of her more, or the movie's more extreme scenes in the actual movie, of, you know, Lucy coming to the door, pretty much blowing away this entire family with a shotgun, and we have no idea why she's doing this. Like, yeah. None of us know, like, what is she sitting here shooting everyone with a shotgun for? Like, she shoots the mother, the father, and the two kids with a shotgun.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. The opening scene in this movie, to me, is a prime example of some of the most unforgiving, unapologetic dark cinema I have ever seen in my life.
And that's why I love it.
This is what I love about this movie, man. The director just said, fuck you, everybody. This is what I'm doing. Yep. And what I mean by unforgiving and unapologetic is the simple fact that she has an idea of what she's going to do and she's sticking to it. She's not giving this family any word to explain what they may or may have not have done.
Yeah.
And she doesn't even hesitate. She fucking kills, you know, the father and shit like that. She does pause with the kids, but still she doesn't let them talk. And it's just
emotionless also. Like at first, yeah. You know, it's just like you said, she's in there to do a job. And one of the best things about that, that choice of filming it like that, where there's a brief moment with the son where she's like, do you know what your parents did? And that's the cue that we kind of understand that, oh, this is a revenge thing from what happened to her when she was young. And then she just blows him away. And the similar situation happens with the daughter. And you just know at that point, okay, there's no rules here. There's nothing that won't happen. And right away, you're as an audience, as a member of the audience, you realize that, okay, I can see anything here. And instantly, and I had a problem with this. Me and Kyle was talking about previously, right before we recorded this, we were talking about our Ash versus Evil Dead show. And there's something in there where it's like, you know, they're not going to die. Like, you know, there's rules to this world and they're not going to cross any boundaries. This one has zero of those rules.
Exactly.
No rules. The way they kill the kids.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I've said, you've heard me, Moods, in the past. I've always hated that movies are too scared to kill kids.
Exactly. And, you know, the opening scene in this film really sets the whole stage for this film.
Yes.
In such a perfect way, because, you know, like you said, there is no rules.
Yep.
So, and anything goes. And that's one of the coolest things about this film. And I've always stated this film to be what I call a schizophrenic. This is not a film school term. I always refer to this film as a schizo film.
That's a great description, by the way. You mentioned that earlier, and I forgot to comment on that before we started recording. And I was like, yeah, dude, that you nailed it with that.
Yeah. It's got like two different, you know, kind of sides to it, which, you know, what schizo is. And, you know, it really sets it up so well. But I think one of the scariest things about this film is that you don't know where it's going, man. You know, like in the first 45 minutes of the film, you see what you get in, in the house.
Well, you're instantly confused too, because you're like, okay, I know what bad people look like, and they didn't really look bad. They were like a normal family. So you're like, what the hell's going on here? And you're kind of wondering.
Beginning of this movie is so confusing. Like you pretty much go into this
intentionally
movie
intentionally confused.
Like, you start out seeing this girl running down through an alley and you have no idea why she's there. Then it ends up like jumping into the future. You're seeing a family who looks perfectly normal being blown away by a shotgun in an extremely disturbing manner. Like, I mean, it's pretty disturbing because she just walks up to every single one of these pieces, like these family members, and just shoots them at point blank range in the chest with a shotgun. And you're like, what is going on right now? Why is this happening? And for the normal person to go into a movie like this, it's ridiculous. I mean, I remember seeing the shotgun scene in this movie, and I call it the shotgun scene because I actually show people this scene all the time on YouTube. I'm like, hey, you got to look up the shotgun scene on Martyrs and just tell me what you think of this.
It's just pure power.
It's very powerful as like seeing it as a person who, I mean, I enjoy like cinema, period. So even seeing it as a person that enjoys cinema, much less seeing it as a person that barely watches movies at all, it'll hit you in the gut, man. It's like, it's going to kick you in the gut. You're going to be like, what the fuck?
Especially because, like, it's also really surprising too.
Very surprising. And like, even if you didn't watch the movie and you just saw that scene, I've shown people this scene, the shotgun scene in this movie, just the scene, and they've never seen the movie, and they're like, holy shit, what the fuck did you just show me? Like, is that real? Like, because it looks pretty realistic for what it is. I mean, it's pretty good effects, but it's very, very powerful for what it is.
Yeah, so that the shotgun scene itself is a scene that can be, you know, really dissected and delved into, and I think that's kind of what we're doing here. One of the things that I think is really powerful about it also is the aftermath, like where you're, you're just kind of seeing the aftermath in the house, the blood splattered on the vase and the, you know, blood all over the floor and in the hallway.
Oh yeah. There's blood fucking, I mean, she covered that house, man. There's like chunk, and they even managed it felt to put, like, little chunks of things and like body parts and, you know, things like that.
Back to what you said earlier though, it felt real. Like that felt to me what it would look like, you know, in my imagination if that happened.
Yeah,
I like how he didn't really, you know, stray away from even showing the bodies too. Like generally, in you know, in cinema, when a child is killed, you know, it's kind of like done. You know, they don't just keep kind of showing it and stuff. There's a scene where the bodies are moved into the bathroom. The mom's laying in the bathtub, and they throw. Who is it? Anna throws. Is it Anna? Yeah, I believe Anna throws the little girl onto the mom, and. You know, it pans back and shows the dead body.
That's a very powerful image, too.
It is. And they do it a few times. But the craziest thing about that scene is that her eyes are open. She's fucking kind of looking over and she's dead. Like she's been blown in half. And it's just really, really powerful because he doesn't stray away from it. He shows it many times in the edit, the way they edit it. And it's just like, holy fuck. Yeah. Just keeps reminding you over and over again that this is fucking real. There's no boundaries here. And we're going to keep coming at you full force.
Something that I was thinking of too is like the scene that you're talking about where they're all in the bathtub is, you know, Anna starts pulling them out to kind of bury them in the backyard. How gritty was it, did you feel, of her dragging them through the mud
and the dirt? Because there's no respect for your fellow man again, right? That's what it is.
One of my favorite things about that scene is when she brings the daughter outside and she hears something in the house, she literally drops the body and just runs back in there. Yeah. And again, that's the child.
They're not straying away from
anything in this film at all. They're just kind of disrespecting dead bodies and just laying in mud and getting rained on. I mean, and that's pretty visually stunning. And it's like, it's so emotional when you're watching. You're like, damn, man, that girl's like 10.
They're
just like disrespecting the shit out of this whole family. Like they're gonna blow him away. They're gonna drag him and throw the dead daughter on top of the dead mother, supposed dead mother, in the bathroom, and then she's gonna drag them through the rain and the mud, just drop them. She didn't even give a fuck. And then the other girl's upstairs looking down at them like, ah, fuck them. You know, you bury them basically. It was just gritty, dude. It's gritty as fuck.
It is, man. And, you know, like after pretty much all that kind of things go down and stuff, you have Lucy, you know, this is kind of an interesting thing is that, you know, in the midst of all this shit, man, they're really kind of minorly focusing on what they're going to do here. But what does Lucy do? She fucking takes a nap.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, isn't that so insane?
She gets into like her little pants, like her panties and like her little shirt. And she just takes a fucking nap like nothing ever happened.
I wonder if this guy ever seen Angst. Because I was getting like a vibe with like some of the body moving and some of the like shots in like the house and stuff.
Maybe. But I love that scene that, you know, that Lucy goes for a nap because, you know, to the viewer, it's already very mentally punishing watching this film because you've just seen a bunch of crazy kills. A bunch of crazy shit going on. You don't really understand what's fully going on. And the same thing's happening to the character. She's like, she's totally exhausted mentally. And what does she do? She just takes a nap. And then you're left sitting there going, are you fucking serious? You're going to go take a nap? Like, you're already drained. And it's it's a really powerful, I think it's more powerful than people think it is.
Yeah, it really is. It's definitely something that could easily be missed, but subconsciously you're aware of it. You're aware that like there's something wrong with that.
Yeah, big time.
One of the things that I got to give credit to this film for, and this is something that I've said in the past, I believe, and I've always thought of, and I'll continue to say, and if there's one way to really elevate your film for me is like continuity with liquids and bloods and, you know, textures like the caked blood on their face and the chapped lips, like it elevates your film to a much higher level just because it's detail. It's about detail, and there's a lot, and I mean a lot of that in this film.
Yeah, and that's the thing, JP. I mean, Kyle, you can relate too. We've reviewed a lot of films in, you know, since we've been doing this and stuff, and consider ourselves minor critics here. But those are the things that I notice like relatively all the time when I'm watching films. And, you know, sometimes it just, you know, the average film goer, I'm you know, it'd be nice to go back to that and not notice those things so you wouldn't nitpick as much.
Yeah.
But we notice these type of things. But when you see it done properly, you're like, damn, that's
elevates
good.
It elevates it, dude.
Yeah,
like, it makes
did you notice her chapped lips and her haggard hair?
Oh,
and
the blood attention on her tank to detail tops with the anxiety
the
of these characters. It's,
you know,
it's
for
ridiculous.
Some, exactly. When you have a viewer that's examining your film that closely, it just, man, it makes it so much better when there's not like continuity issues
movie,
and things like that.
You could tell this movie was very important to the director when things like that are very, very noticeable. He's very passionate about this film in general because
the very shot in general
with a lot of movies.
The shot that Mood said about the way that she lays the daughter in the arms of the dead mother and the dead daughter in the shower. Like, to me, that's all passion. Like, you don't think of a shot like that if you're not super into film.
That's a shot where you don't give a fuck as a director either, because you know that kind of like scenery in a movie is going to get a lot of attention. I mean, no matter who you are, there's going to be critics watching your movie. They're going to say, dude, why did you lay this daughter on top of this mother?
I bet you like, Roger Ebert was shitting bricks during this.
Dude, he wouldn't even watch Solo, so you know he probably ain't going to watch this shit. But like, what I'm saying is like, this fucking movie in general, like the visuals, like the shotgun scene, the scene where the daughter is fucking dead and the son's dead and they get blown away. Who, like, the director just does not give a damn. He just is like, okay, I'm going to do what I want to do, like Mood said, and I'm going to make this movie. I don't give a fuck
about
it.
So he listened to Moods?
What Mood was saying earlier.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
But I mean, if that scene couldn't get any more uncomfortable, you know, you got this mother that's laying in this tub dead, her daughter's laying on her dead, but the mother's not dead.
That is true.
And that is one scene where, like I said, this whole opening 45 minutes in the film is just, it's so mentally punishing. You're like, are you kidding me? She's not. And then she just kind of gets up and she's, ugh. And then what's the first thing she kind of notices? Like, her daughter's laying on her dead. And you're just like, holy fuck. It's so brutal, man. And then she fucking drags her out. And of course, Lucy's nowhere around. And once Lucy figures out that Anna's actually trying to help the mom now. Because I think she has this – at that moment, she feels kind of bad for her because, you know, I don't think she fully understands exactly what Lucy's going through at that moment. Mm-hmm. But, man, dude, I tell you, like, Lucy's reaction to this is just – oh, for fuck.
The sledgehammer.
So brutal.
Dude, I was eating –
violence in this. Like, her passion for wanting to kill these people is so brutal. It's so honest. It's so honest. She doesn't even hesitate. She doesn't think about it. She just bashes her head in, but she doesn't stop. She's dead. Like, she just keeps giving her. And the way it's filmed so in your face. It's literally right there.
Yeah.
You know, you're feeling those hits every fucking time. And this movie's so powerful in every scene. You're just like, holy shit, dude.
It goes beyond, right? It's about, like, there's a certain amount of punishment that is acceptable or what you would consider normal. And then she escalates that and goes beyond.
This is personal.
Yeah.
It's so personal.
I've seen this movie probably 5 or 6 times in my entire life. And when I watched that today, I actually watched the movie today again. I revisited it. I was eating a hamburger during that scene. I was in the middle of my hamburger, and this chick was bashing in this chick's brains with a sledgehammer.
And you're like, oh, it kind of looks like.
And you're like, okay, well, I'm eating a brain right now, and I'm watching a brain get smashed in. So it's like, what the fuck is my life right now? I was like so disgusted. I put the hamburger down. I was like, I gotta wait until the scene's over to even pick this back up. This is disgusting.
Yeah.
So it was a pretty very. It was a very violent and disgusting scene to see, like, because it showed her head bouncing off the ground as she was getting hit with every blow.
Yeah.
It was crazy, dude.
And
oh, I know.
You did mention that, you know, there was a lot of passion in that, or, you know, just a seriousness to it. But we're kind of introduced to a concept here where we're seeing the delusions, if you want to call it that, of, Lucy. And that it's kind of driven by that too, because we find out through a little backstory flashback that when she escaped, she stopped and seen. We see how she escaped, and then she stopped and seen that there was another person captive,
mm-hmm.
and she essentially didn't stay to help.
Yeah. Well, she couldn't really. I mean,
whether she could or couldn't, that's up for, you know, whoever to decide.
Would you?
Well,
I would say, fuck her. I'm out, dude.
That's not what's important, though. Like, your personal,
what
you would do. It's what she feels from it is what's important.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, whether it's right or wrong, whether you would or wouldn't, what matters is she feels guilty.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She's having these flashbacks of pretty much that person in general, because I guess she does feel, you know, pretty guilty about the situation at hand. So
whether it was the right thing to do, because she probably, she was a kid, couldn't do anything. It probably was the right thing to do. But that doesn't matter with the guilt. The guilt's going to be there for her personally.
I do like how the directors set that up though, you know, with, because
at first I didn't like it. I was, cause they don't tell you that. And I was like, what the fuck is this? I was like, this is like a ghostly now.
Yeah, exactly. But it's just like completely,
it makes sense.
Her demons and stuff that she's dealing with. And like, and at first when you're watching it, you're going, what the fuck is going on? Like, I think the first time it happens, you're like, who the fuck is this person that's attacking her?
Yeah, it took me two watches to figure out, and that sounds weird, but the first time I ever watched this movie, I didn't really pay attention very closely to it, because you really do have to, because when I first watched this movie and I saw that, I was like, what the fuck is this? And then I missed the portion, you know, of the movie where you find out that it is just her inner demons, and, you know, I was like, okay, so I saw it again, and I was like, oh, that makes a little bit more sense.
One of the things is, Kyle, sorry to cut you off, but the subtitles, they move fast. There's actually a couple times I had to rewind because, like, I'm trying to see what's on screen and I missed a key point of dialogue, and I was like, wait.
Which is kind of ironic in a little bit though, because like the first half of the film does have the dialogue that's like the last 45 minutes has like no dialogue basically.
Yeah.
You know, it just kind of changes tempo with you know, with dialogue completely. But yeah, I know what you're saying. The subtitles actually do kind of fly by in this too. But and you know, there is scenes where, yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on the screen too. You don't want to really miss that. So
it's kind of funny because I usually recommend, and like I was telling JP this earlier before we even started, I don't normally recommend dubbing in movies whatsoever, but this movie actually has pretty spot on dubbing.
I actually have watched this movie probably
three or four times with dubbing on, and it sounds fine. Like the actual dubbing is actually very well done.
I don't even consider it an option when I'm watching films. If I can watch a film in its native language with subtitles, that's the way I'm going to do it. Sometimes you don't have a choice. Like there's, you know, Italian films, they're just dubbed over. That's just the way they are.
There's no existing audio track.
Exactly. That's just the way they are. But so you accept it, but it's easier for me to accept that. But if there's an option of throwing on a dub when there's subtitles, no, that's not going
to
happen.
I just don't know. I might throw it on just to see what you're talking about, but I just can't imagine that it's good.
It's actually really, like, honestly, the dubbing in this movie and Inside as well. Like, if you actually watch the DVD I have for Martyrs and Inside both automatically have the dubbing on, so I just kind of just watch them. But, like, I've watched both movies with dubbing on, and it's really not that bad.
Dead Snow is like that.
Yeah, it's weird because the dubbing comes on and I don't even think about it. I just watch it.
I hate that more than anything. I'll watch it, whatever. When I pop in a film and like the dub track just comes up, I hate that, man. That drives me nuts.
Yeah, and like just to be completely honest, as a viewer, I hate dubbing, and like the Martyrs dubbing is very well done. Like it really does not. That it sounds obviously like it's fake because it is fake, but like the way that they actually perceive the dubbing is not that bad. You can watch it with it on, and it actually isn't that bad. So
you know, I never had a problem with, you know, with ADR and dubbing and you know, things like that when I was, you know, pre going to school for this. But when working on films and doing sound and doing ADR and stuff like that, I can't do it, dude.
I can imagine.
I know how it works, and I'm just like, this is fucking bullshit, man.
I can imagine.
I need that original track.
The same way, if I were you,
I just got someone dubbing over on. I'm like, okay, no, this is silly, man.
Yeah, I thought it would have been the most complicated thing. I remember when I first got my first foreign film. This is completely off topic, but my first foreign film was The Ringu, and I thought it was going to be so complicated to watch. I asked for The Ring, and I got Ringu by mistake for Christmas or something, and I thought it was going to be so complicated to watch it with subtitles, and I just never watched it for years, literally years, and then I finally did, and I was like, this wasn't even that hard.
Yeah, I was going to say, the worst dubbing you can probably listen to is South Korean movies or Korean movies in general. I actually had the dubbing on for about 20 minutes on I Saw the Devil, and I was like, this is the most laughable, like, excuse for a movie dubbing I've ever heard in my life.
But it could turn any film into a comedy.
Yeah, it really can. But, like, honestly, and I'm not even bullshitting, I'm saying that this movie is not that bad with dubbing. So if you guys are listening, if you want to watch it with dubbing, maybe check it out for, like, 30 minutes. If it sounds stupid, then turn it off. Who knows? But it was easier for me to – it's easier for me to watch this movie because it's so kind of – for me, it was kind of confusing the first times, the first two times I watched it to have the dubbing on. So I don't know. Whatever you guys prefer. So –
yeah, so moving forward in the film, you know, that's kind of when we're then introduced to the fact that, okay, we still don't know whether these people did anything, right? You assume – did you guys assume that they didn't?
Well, Lucy, she does – you know, she does kind of bring out the piece of paper, I think, early. It's a little bit earlier, I think, even up into this point. And she shows Anna the news clipping, and she actually has the head circled, right? And she's like, yeah, it's them. Yeah.
You know what? Yeah. I totally didn't. I must have missed that.
There is a little bit of a degree, a certain, like, uncertainty.
Yeah.
Up until that point, like, yeah, like, because she does kill him, and then it's more of a reaction of her, because she says to Anna at one point, she's like, well, it's 15 years later. Cause Lucy says to Anna, she's like, it's 15 years later. Cause I think Anna does say, like, are you sure this is the people kind of thing, right? Because there was kids, and I think it was more just a reaction, like, holy fuck, you just took out a whole family.
Anna seemed very confused about the whole situation.
Yeah,
like,
well, that's an interesting thing, because what is their relationship? You get the sense that they're friends from a long back. They took care of each other
friends.
And stuff. Are they?
That's pretty much it.
Do you think
she had a love interest in her?
See, that's what I was going to say. Do you think Anna loved Lucy?
Like, their bond was created because they both shared a childhood trauma, which was child abuse, right?
Yeah.
And I'm assuming sometimes it affects girls to the point where, you know, they turn against guys and they became lovers because they shared that. And I guess that's just how they understood each other. But yeah,
you guys agree that there was probably,
well, you get the idea of that they were together because the mother, Anna's mother, called and she was like, are you still with her? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And you know, and they do kiss at one point.
She kisses her while the dead bodies are around. It's like, okay, well, they don't give a fuck, they're lesbians. This is pretty much it.
So,
but I mean, it's definitely bona fide when Anna phones her mom, which is with the confusing thing about the orphanage and stuff, but her mom literally says to her, like, are you still with her? She's evil, she's bad, blah blah blah.
Now let me ask you guys this, I might have missed this as well. Did they explain how she found them?
How who found them?
How Lucy found the family, the people that did that to her.
Well, she knew where they were. I mean, she probably tracked them down over time. And I mean, she ran from the place. She went back to the place she ran from.
Yeah, but they're not going to stay at that place. I mean, the cops probably went
there. They were there.
Place.
They were apparently still there. I mean, that's the only thing I could think of is, like, they were still in the same compound.
No, they're in a different place, dude.
It's a different – yeah, because the other place was – it was different. No, they didn't really explain it. You just kind of have to take it.
I noticed that they didn't, I instantly was like, how do I feel about that? And I was like, well, it's completely unimportant. Does not matter.
The only thing I can think of is, you know, she had that news clipping, she had the names and stuff, and maybe she just went from there. I don't know.
I mean, she was probably stalking that company or the people that, like, the type of people or the people that were, like, you know, holding that whole group up.
I don't
up.
Think she knew about all that.
Of what?
She had to.
The ending
There's
stuff?
There's no other explanation.
Why did she have to know about all that?
Well, no, I don't.
How else would she find them?
I think she just thought that these people tortured her. She doesn't know why or who they were. They just.
I honestly don't believe that Lucy knew exactly what these people or this corporation, whatever you want to call these people, what their main goal was with them.
I'll
because
tell
you,
why
you,
exactly.
you have to remember, Lucy was only, you know, roughly 10 years old when this happened. You know, this is 15 years later. She was or whatever, 15 or whatever she was. So she was pretty young. I don't think she knew exactly what their goal was, that it isn't that she didn't know.
And because she spent 15 years with the other girl, you're telling me that she wouldn't have said something about that over the time? Because you can see that the other girl, when it happens to her, is kind of all taken back and surprised by the whole situation.
I think she probably mentioned it to the other girl, but she didn't go into the depth of what it was.
I think they were just
young and they just felt like they were being tortured
yep,
for whatever reasons. They wouldn't know. otherwise. I mean, there's no reason for those people, though, I just call them the people, to really even inform them of what they're doing.
Yeah, there really isn't.
You know,
yeah,
no, they, well, they, neither of them had, well, Lucy until had it no gets idea to a certain what point. Happening. I mean, she had no idea whatsoever. You could tell you that.
Yeah, you do see it later with Anna, you know, like the people, they start to kind of, like, once she starts getting to a certain point, mm-hmm. when they kind of figure that maybe she is going to, you know, see the other side and blah, 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 you know, they tell her.
Well, they
know,
lay it all out on the table as well a little bit too, but that's different because she's an adult and she's,
yeah.
They didn't pick her up off the street. Like, this was a different situational pickup.
You know, oh, big I mean? Time.
So
big
it time. Makes sense yeah. that they would kind of explain to her, like, well, this wasn't yeah. as planned, but, you know, this is what we're going to do to you. This is, like, what we're yeah. kind of all about. And speaking of which,
yeah,
it is revealed that first they do find that you got to talk about it. We got to talk about the scene where they find the one girl in the basement. And that's when, you know, for without a shadow of a doubt that these people aren't involved in it. Exactly. She's chained up in the yeah. basement.
That was a pretty like. That was another powerful scene, I thought, whenever, you know, that she goes down into the basement and that chain kind of just like jerks
uh-huh.
and you're like, she kind of like, it doesn't
that's
even show what it is.
Filmmaking right there, dude. That's
very good filmmaking because great. It doesn't reveal who it is until she gets to the person. Like, that person could have easily shined the flashlight down there and say, oh, this is who it is. But she, they waited until she got all the way down to the actual, you know, thing, if you want to call it that. And it's shown the flash, and you're like, whoa, what the fuck? And like, yeah, it's like yeah, a woman with like yeah. a fucking face mask on and all yeah. that shit. So
you know that this whole next scenes that play out, I think are brilliant. For one, when she first gets her upstairs, you can just see just so many different. This is great acting, by the way. You can see so many different emotions going through the prisoners. Body. They don't know anything. They're so confused. They still don't know what's going on. They can't see anything. They've been in a hole tied up for God knows how long. They don't know. They just, there's just utter confusion and chaos like running through their head. And then you see, what's the second girl's name? Not Lucy. The other one,
Anna.
You see Anna grab some like alcohol and she comes up and she's like, she's just completely confused. Like, I don't know what to do. Like, I can't even help you. Like, what do I do to you? Like, you're yeah. fucked. You know what I mean? And that scene is powerful to me because she brings a bottle of alcohol like she's going to clean some wounds or something. And she just looks and it's like,
well,
there's nothing
so
I
many,
can do here.
There's so many wounds and she has no idea where to start.
Yeah.
This little bit of what I have here is not going to help you.
Yeah. And it comes to terms
it's
with
clear
that.
As day, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she, you know, takes her to the bathtub and stuff and pulls that damn thing out of her. That's just wrong to do to somebody, to staple that thing to their damn head.
Yeah, well, the like, thing that I kind of found weird about that whole situation was, like, I feel like if you did that to somebody that they would probably, I don't know, man, you put staples in somebody's head. Like, I don't know. I feel like that would probably cause, like, more damage than – I don't think you'd be able to walk. Like, I don't know, man. Those are pretty big staples, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they're, like, more bricks yeah. than staples. I mean, I don't know. Yeah,
they were
whether
almost
it's
like
possible
nails.
Or not, I have questions about that in the final, you know, thing that happens in this film, whether it's actually possible to do that to somebody. I don't know.
Well, even if it's not, like, I would say another disturbing aspect to this film is when she's pulling those nails out of her head. I was, like, kind of cringing. I was like, ooh. Like, this is kind of fucking gross. Like, and then she has like a big ass like chain, like I guess like I don't know what you would call it.
Like
it's like a
wire.
Belt. So she has like a belt around her waist that's like nailed to her waist.
Well, it's grown into like her skin because it's been that.
Yeah,
so
I know.
Long.
It's just,
and just the wear and tear
like
on the body was.
It's like the world's worst chastity belt right there.
That's exactly what it is.
The wear and tear on the body, dude. Just phenomenal work. Like, it looks so. Sad.
The body looks disgusting.
It looks
yeah,
so
the
sad.
The makeup,
like, where do you go from
in
this?
The
where do you
really
live
good.
On? Like, where do you
yeah.
go?
Whoever yeah. did the special effects on this movie and, like, the practical effects, like, with the body, that shit's, like, very, very realistic. Like, I was looking at that chick the whole time, even when she put her in the bathtub, and I was like, God, that's fucked up, man. Like, the cuts on her body plus the chastity belt plus the head thing, the way she looked, it was just gross.
The final of the attempted cutting of the flesh, man. I'll tell you what, like, I seen like hacked up wrists, man. And
yeah,
it was the
vicious.
Way she was like sliding the flesh off, like, kind of did remind me of what it almost not really looks like, but it, I mean, it
I can imagine
it's deep like that, man. It's and it it's wide. And it just was like brought back flashbacks to what it really – it's like the chunkiness of it too. I don't know, man.
Oh, and the reactions too. Like both by Lucy and Anna in this film, like their acting in the film is so solid. Like every time they're reacting to a situation, it's like I'm watching them closely and I'm like, man – it just seems so realistic.
It's realistic, yeah.
Yeah.
They're really pulling it off well, like every time, because it's just nonstop, right? Like it must have been an exhausting film to do, but yeah, really, really good. Really good stuff. Like Anna's reaction when she's like fucking digging into her wrist.
And like, of course, oh, I thought she was trying to commit suicide, but that's not the case.
No, no.
She was, and then she came out and was like rubbing against the wall.
Yeah. Well, that was confusing too when it started happening.
Yeah, yeah, they do explain it. Do you know what happened, Kyle, why she was doing that?
Yeah, they said that, like, the older woman in the movie said that she was she felt like she had insects in her skin or some shit.
Yeah, and that's the result because that's the experiments that they were doing on these people, right? People reacted differently.
Yeah,
because – you know, like Lucy would see – well, that demon that she's seen, that's what she would see. And then this girl right here would see, you know, cockroaches and insects and things like that on her.
I wish I had the actual way that they explained that line where she said, like, when people are, you know, to this point, they fear – I forget how the line went, but it really made sense. It made 100% sense.
Yeah, yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. But, yeah, it was due to what they've endured.
Yeah, what they've endured, they kind of – it's a psychological thing where you just you make connections. Yeah.
And that's part of the experiments. It's almost like – it's almost Nazi shit right there.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, one of the things was
– using this, humans as experiments.
This that scene totally flashed me back to, in my opinion, one of the scenes that disturbed me the most as a child, and that was Hellraiser 2 when you see the inmate cutting his flesh because he thinks there's bugs in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, getting to the middle and almost into the third act, JP, I know this is your first time watch and, you know, like, what are your thoughts on Lucy, killing herself?
Well, I feel like she was a completely emotionally damaged person and she thought that doing this would set her free somehow. And it was very apparent that it didn't. And, I think she just kind of either was forced by the thing that her delusions to do it, or she kind of realized on her own.
There's a lot of different ways to take it. You know, like, you know, Lucy's spent the last 15 years kind of probably plotting out this and she figures, well, you know, I got them, you know, and I'm fucking damaged, you know, I might as well just kind of end it. But it's that moment in the film where you go, man, Lucy, you are really, really selfish here. Yeah. You know, for a couple different reasons. Like, she's supposed to be in this relationship with Anna. Plus, she also leaves Anna in that situation.
I think it's a one-sided relationship, dude. I really do.
Yeah.
I think that Lucy was not emotionally involved in that relationship like Anna was.
I feel like the reason that is because when you see them in the bathroom together when all those bodies were there, Anna kisses Lucy and Lucy's kind of like, what are you doing? You know what I mean? Like, I felt like Lucy was in a way using Anna a little bit to find out this whole situation. But at the same time, I did feel like they were emotionally involved as friends. I just think Anna thought a little bit more than it was supposed to be.
I just felt like they were connected. They were together. They were just a duo. They were part of each other, but it was a one-sided love relationship.
You know, they're definitely connected through their history and stuff. Like, I don't know. I kind of think that they maybe have had something, but who really knows? I guess.
Well, the reason I say they didn't, it one, that scene that Kyle pointed out, but two, also just the emotional damage that Lucy had where she was seeing those delusions. And I felt like at the end of it, she succumbed to the delusions and she didn't make a conscious effort to end her life. I felt like it was just, that was just what was happening in her head.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I she'd probably made up in her mind that this is never going to go away, and I've completed, you know, by taking out these people that did this to me. So what's
the
point?
You see the things that her wrist for her a little bit. You know what I mean? In her head, it's the thing that like she thought it would go away, but still there.
Yeah. I mean, it's very much like the scene where Lucy's laying in the hallway, and then Anna's laying behind her, and Anna looks, and then that's when you get that first glimpse of holy shit, like these demons are really doing a number on her. She's just bashing her fucking head against the wall. It's a really kind of sad scene, you know, again, on that emotional roller coaster. You're just like, that's really sad. But you know, the first time I watched this movie, which was years ago, obviously, and I remember watching it going, fucking Lucy, so selfish. She just kills herself and leaves her friend there to go and deal with all this shit. Because right after, you know, Lucy
all that
kills
shit
herself, you know, Anna's still there. And then all of a sudden, which I call the people.
Yeah. Well,
they show up
and, because that's what the hell they are. They're just people.
Exactly. They're like a weird religious group, I guess, or I don't know they're what the pretty, fuck they are, really.
Yeah, they're like this really kind of weird religious cult slash influenced by Nazism. I don't know. It's really, really fucking strange. Like, Mademoiselle kind of looks like, you know, that she was part of, like, the Fourth Reich or something like that. I don't know. It's kind of strange to me. It's kind of strange, but...
Overall, like, basically, they pretty much just capture her. And then they put her on a chair and they're like, look at these people. Do you notice something about them? Look at their eyes. Like, these people are still alive in these photos, although they are, as you can see, they look like they should be dead. And something that we believe is that, you know, it has to do with the, you know, the martyr thing, right? It's the, it's once you're pushed beyond, the core concept there is that it's the afterlife. That's the core concept behind it.
They're trying to push people to the absolute limit. You know, they're still alive, but they can still see the other side.
See after death, basically.
Yeah, they can see even though they're still alive. Because theoretically, in the way, you know, religion works is that you're not really supposed to see the other side unless you're dead.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So they're trying to push it because what they're trying to accomplish is that they want to push these people to the point where they're still alive, they see the other side, and that's why they want to know for sure. They want that martyr, in this case, to report and say, hey, there actually is another side. You guys did your job. Yeah.
Yeah, and the way that they do this is punish. They start by just feeding them this awful stuff. And you can see the deterioration of the character as, like, at first they're spitting it out. They're not down with this. And eventually they just kind of give up. And, you know, Anna does. Moods, she does fast, actually. And I thought it was very representative of her character.
I have a theory on that too, the reason why she does it, because it's like, I mean, obviously she wouldn't know if she's going to get to the point and see the other side, but she does give up. And I think it's honestly, I think in my opinion, the director set this up purposely because of that, the end scene in the film where Anna whispers something to Mademoiselle. And
so you think that it was intentional?
I think it was intentional because I think it was a setup because I've watched this and I've examined.
See, I take the ending differently though.
Yeah, but okay. Well, I mean, if we want to get to there, you guys want to give your theories on the end.
So
okay, well, I'll give my theory read here. Okay, so the rest of the film basically is the people torturing the shit out of Anna,
which
and
is
what
brutal, by the way. It's a lot of beating, and I found that was
skinning.
It's a lot of very realistic beat. It just looks real.
Yeah,
like, it's really, really fucking.
Dude
ass.
Knocks
her
out, picks her up, knocks her out again, and it just looks so real. Like, it doesn't look like fake movie punches.
You pretty much get the idea of what happened to Lucy sound at the beginning of the film too. Yeah, yeah. So,
and honestly, dude, the swelling, the black and blue, it is some of the best that I've ever seen. I watch a lot of MMA, right? I know what this stuff looks like. And I was pretty impressed with the eye swelling and the purple colors and just the cuts. They all looked real to me.
Yeah, yeah. So anyways, I think at one point Anna's decided, well, you know, she's given up basically. And she's almost devising a plan here. You know, she figures that if she does get to the point, because it's been explained to her what they're trying to accomplish, she knows that, you know, if she sees the other side, she is going to basically tell Mademoiselle that it doesn't exist because it's the ultimate revenge because she knows the fucking truth, you know, and that's ultimately what happens here. You know, Anna gets to the point, sees this kind of white light, and then, you know, you see Anna whispering something to Mademoiselle in the end of the film. You don't know what she says. Mm-hmm.
See, that's where I think that theory becomes problematic, because if it was just that, then they would have said it.
I don't think so. I don't think so at all. I think it works so well because it's
she
like, what is
herself,
she
man.
Huh?
She made Mademoiselle kill herself.
Yeah, she but I'm herself. Saying if that's what she told her, if she said that there's nothing and she killed herself, then I feel like that
it's a cheap device to plan.
They would have said it's they would have had her say that.
So I'll say this.
No, I don't think so. I honestly think it was the ultimate revenge because she's been tortured this whole time. She needs a little bit of – she needs to get back at them somehow. She sees the other side. She confirms it. She tells Mademoiselle there's nothing there. Mademoiselle had already made up her mind that this was the one. Anna was the one. She's definitely going to see it. They brought in people, blah, blah, blah. And by telling her that there was nothing there, it was such a huge letdown for Mademoiselle. She fucking kills herself, man. She can't deal with it. She's like, this is crazy. I had 100% in my mind that Anna, what we'd done, it was perfectly 100%. Like, it worked. It worked. We made Anna see the other side. She's still alive. She reported back to me.
Why do you think she didn't see the other side then, right? Unless there is nothing, in that case, then she saw nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, then it was that she didn't devise the plan, that it just was the end outcome. So why is it, do you think, that she didn't see any? If they're so sure that, like, this is to the point, they've done this experiment a bunch of times, like, this is to the point, like, why do you think that it is that it didn't happen to her? Because she looked pretty fucked to me.
What do you mean? Like, Anna looked fucked?
Yeah, like, because there's a scene where it says, like, you just stop.
You think that she didn't see?
You just stop. Wait, but are you saying she did see or she didn't see anything?
She probably did and lied to her is what
that's what I thought
he
was saying. But I'm saying she didn't get to that point that they thought she did.
No, I'm saying that she did. And
there was nothing, or she just told her nothing?
No, that there was. That Anna truly believed that she saw the other side. But in her mind, she's like, well, you know, I'm not going to let her know. I'm not going to give her the satisfaction of torturing me for however long this was. Yeah, and this is what I'm saying. She's not going to give Mademoiselle and the rest of the people the satisfaction of telling her, yeah, there's the other side. I'm not going to be that martyr. Fuck you. I'm not doing this for you. So she tells her, I didn't see anything, knowing the truth that she did. And ultimately, I'm not saying Anna knew that Mademoiselle was going to fucking kill herself because she had her mind made up. Mademoiselle was like, hey, this is one.
It's like the final fuck you. Like, I know and I'm not telling you.
Exactly. And that was the only thing that Anna could do because she knew she was going to die.
Yeah.
She couldn't do anything. She could never get revenge.
That's not too bad of a thing. Like, that's probably might be what the director intended. My thing
I
just
hope
came
it is.
From,
I hope it is. I hope it is because I've thought about this very deeply.
Well, yeah. I considered that too. But my thing was that there's a scene early on where, you know, when she's first going through the torturing and she's kind of at the, you know, kind of on the edge and she has like a vision where she says, basically, you just give up and stop feeling. And that's what happened. And I felt like there was nothing to showcase her character as being a strong character to this point. Like, I just thought she was a weak character and she just succumbed to it. That's it. The you can only take so much. And I didn't really ever look at her as that she's this master genius to come up with this plan. But I guess that could work too.
I honestly, truly believe, I think that's what makes the ending so damn powerful, is because that's why the director shows her giving up. He literally shows her eating food. She's just giving up. She's like, whatever, okay.
But I think he had this reverse way. I saw it as powerful nobody can really take that. And it's sad. It's powerful because it's sad. Yeah. She didn't make it. There's nothing that she can do. They skinned her alive. And by the end of it, I thought that whatever she told, I thought that the experiment was a success, first of all. She did reach that martyr level where she saw beyond. And I just thought that whatever she told her, either she couldn't wait to experience it herself, so she killed herself, or she just thought that it was nothing, it was just a disappointment, and she killed herself.
Well, the reason why I think, like, my theory works is because killing yourself is a sin. And, you know, in the eyes of God, it's not really that good, man.
Just
not good. Yeah.
They don't ever say God or Jesus Christ or any of that. No. They want to know what's beyond.
Exactly. But I mean, I guess that's something you do assume, I guess, you know, maybe they're just, I don't know who really knows. I mean, it's all up to just opinion and, you know, whatever.
I'm pretty sure skinning somebody alive is pretty much a sin as well. I'm just saying.
Exactly. But, you know, but that's the interesting thing that this movie showcases, is that they're willing to do
right on this, though.
I think these religious people, but, you know,
I'm just a Debbie Downer.
This is how
I like to think that she's
just amazing this film really is because he does showcase the true nature of religious fanatics, man. They contradict themselves.
The essence of martyr, like what a martyr is.
Yeah,
love that.
And I mean, these true fanatics and these cults, they're theoretically hypocrites.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they contradict these themselves to death.
Yes.
I mean, they're willing to do all these bad things, but, you know, like, you know, they can't do this one sin or else they won't get into heaven, you know, things like that, right? And I think that's kind of what he's showcasing here. I don't know. I think this movie is just beyond powerful, and I think it's really interesting, you know, the different views on how to interpret the ending.
I think at the end we still come to the same conclusion that Mademoiselle killed herself based on a disappointment factor, but I just saw it as like that she couldn't possibly withstand this because there's nothing that I'm seeing out of her character that would suggest that she could. So that I might be on a pessimistic where I kind of just assumed that it was like a downer ending. But,
yeah. Well, for sure, dude. The first time I watched the movie, I didn't really know what to think. And I kept thinking to myself, I'm like, did she just fucking – I didn't really know.
I
honestly couldn't devise a proper opinion, you know, when I first – I didn't really even get it. Like I was like, okay –
Yeah,
like, you know, just kind of that night. I'm just like, okay, but yeah, it is interesting when you watch it because I actually picked up on a couple more things watching it this time around. Like I said, I hadn't seen it in 5 years. Dude.
I feel like I got the most of the gist of it the first viewing. It was so weird because, I don't know. Was he gonna say, Kyle?
No, I was gonna say no. That's where the directing style of this movie, the actual like directorial, I guess, like approach to this movie is like very interesting is the ending, because it's like it can leave a lot up to interpretation. It's like when I first watched this movie, the first couple of times I watched this movie, I didn't really take Moods's idea into aspect as much as I am kind of now, because when I first watched the first two times, maybe one or two times I watched this movie, I was like, she killed herself to go to the other side. I didn't really think about the fact that, hey, you know, maybe religion wise, you know, you're not really supposed to kill yourself. That's looked on as a sin. But the more I think about it, you know, the more he kind of explained it just now, it makes a little bit more sense that, you know, she pretty much lied to Mademoiselle and said, hey, you know, there's nothing on the other side, which pretty much brings her entire existence to a crumble, to nothing, because that's pretty much what she's going for is, I got to find out what's on the other side. And, you know, there's nothing there, so fuck it. I'm going to kill myself. Why am I going to live anymore?
Yeah. It's so perfect, though. Anna has nothing to lose at that moment. You know, she's just like, I might as well just fucking
die. My only complaint with that idea is they tell us how extreme these things are. They explain what it is to go as far beyond as possible. What is indicative of that character to show that you that she was capable of doing something that was thought impossible? That was my only problem. That's why I thought she just succumbed to the normal beatings and you can't take it anymore life of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. Like, she didn't seem like an overly strong female character. Not even female, it doesn't matter. But they did mention that females has something to do with this, by the way, which I thought was interesting. Because they do say that it seems like females are more able to do this than males.
I think what it comes to is that she just didn't want to give into their cause.
I understand, you know, that, but like the way that they explained it, the Mademoiselle and all them, like they explained it as if it was like it's like no human can just, like, you can't just do it. You either have that martyr thing or whatever. I don't know. It's an interesting concept. It really is, and I did find it very.
Well, put it this way, episode 1.5 of the podcast, going to be an interview with Pascal Laguerre, however you say it. No, not a lick.
What the hell?
That doesn't matter. Dude, you're Mexican. You don't know Spanish. Come on.
Well, that's because I'm like a failure at being Mexican, but... great theories. I think that was what the director's intent was. I just, you know, the thing being her character, I kind of was just pulling something different. But I'm pretty sure you're correct. You're probably hitting it spot on.
I hope I
believe you are.
Yeah.
And
I mean that ending makes a lot more sense than
it's so powerful though, right? It's just like
it's such a revenge.
It is. I know, and it's so crazy. Like, this whole movie is such an emotional roller coaster. It's just, it's visceral. It's just so, like I
this
said,
movie is like, this movie is like very in your face, unforgiving, never, in your face.
It's so good. It never stops. It never stops. Right from the opening scene, you see a young person running out of a building. You're like, what the fuck? That's not cool. It never stops.
You know what? People,
right to the very last
scene. I've
heard
people describe this film as like, oh, it's super good. The violence is very brutal and disturbing, but it has a lot of plot holes and doesn't really make sense. And I really didn't see that in this. I felt like it didn't have really a lot of plot holes, and it did kind of make sense.
It doesn't if you watch it and kind of dissect it like we are, because when I first watched this movie, it took me a few times to watch it to understand the complete, you know, the whole tenacity of the actual film, because I watched it the first time. If you go into this movie, I know you probably got it a little bit more JP.
I'm also watching it with a critical eye. I know that I'm going to be talking about it on the podcast. I watched
it when I first watched it. I was in 10th grade and had no idea what the fuck was going on. I was in high school and didn't know what the fuck was going on with it. So
yeah, I wasn't like that lost. I was just, you know, really trying to figure out.
You probably wasn't watching it in terms to review it either, though, right, Moats?
No, I think definitely not.
Factors in.
No, it's a big factor. You know, like, you know, when I watch films for fun, sometimes, you know,
does that
I'm
even
either
happen anymore because barely
no,
happens
I do.
With me.
I do. I mean, you know, generally I'm watching cheesy action films or something. I don't know, but you know what I'm saying. Like, I don't know. I can't remember what I was getting at there.
Well, either way, I think that it's
I got sidetracked.
It's about time to kind of get into the final segments here. Should we do our ratings first, or is it disturbing first? Which one do you want to do first?
I'd say we go ahead and rate it, dude.
So one other question. This is kind of like off topic ish, but is these like Hall of like is these are like 22 Shots Presents stuff? Is this does this count for Hall of Fame stuff or no?
Well, I mean, it's up to you, man. I mean, you're the one that puts in the work on the
website.
Well,
it doesn't.
So
it's not really any extra work.
I would say yes,
okay,
considering
down.
Kyle is kind of the, you know, unofficial
He's
third
like
member
sister.
of the big brother. So
I'm the bastard brother.
The bastard brother.
And the whole point of the Hall of Fame is to let people know that these are the like best films. So like, why wouldn't we want to put it there? You know, if it made it, you know, I'm not saying it is, but for future.
Exactly.
All right. So
yeah,
Moods, start off with a rating, bro.
Okay. Well, I mean, I've said a lot about this film. I can't really add a whole lot more to it. You know, I just, the thing about this movie that I love is that it's so punishing. You know, it's an emotional roller coaster. You know, it's exhausting. It's mentally, mentally punishing when you watch this movie. And I get a lot out of it, man. It just keeps you so geared and you just want to know. I described this movie a lot, a couple years back as being psychologically empowering. And what I mean by that is this is the type of movie that is why I love movies, because it really does make me, and it encourages myself to start thinking in a higher degree. You know, you got to look at things and you got to figure it out in the end. And, you know, I mean, cause some people might think the ending's a little ambiguous or whatever, who knows, but you know, I truly believe it isn't. I think there is a valid reason for what happened. I did explain it, but psychologically empowering. And this is like the idealistic film for myself. I think there's really not a lot wrong with this. You know, the realistic and brutal violence in this film
is unapologetic violence.
It's so unapologetic and it's so dark and it's just brutal. And this one pulls no punches. Like there's absolutely no comedic elements to this movie whatsoever. It's raw. It's gritty. It's just in your face and it just keeps coming. It's, you know, it never stops. Like I said, from the opening scene right to the very last scene, it's an amazing film. It runs 100 minutes, but it doesn't feel like it's 100 minutes. It's just, you know, theoretically it doesn't. I mean, like I said,
you know, 20 minutes left. I'm like, how are they going to wrap this up? You know what I mean? Like,
I know. Right. And, I think it's just, it's a modern day classic. It's a masterpiece. And, you know, I think this movie just needs to be, you know, not only put into that disturbing, you know, realm of films and stuff, but needs to be put into, you know, the whole awesome films realm. You know, this isn't just a disturbing piece of cinema. It really does work on all levels. 10 out of 10.
Very well said, my friend. Kyle.
That's going to be hard to follow because he pretty much said pretty much everything I was thinking about this movie. And one of the episodes of the 22 Shots podcast, I guest on with you guys, we were talking about the Martyrs remake, and I did say I had a lot to say about this film. I feel pretty much the exact same way Moods does about it. I feel like it's pretty much, like you said, JP, it's unapologetic. I mean, extremely, extremely graphic. It does pretty much set a point about the movie, about things as far as the theme of the actual film goes. I do feel like this movie kind of set in motion a lot of the newer extreme films that have been coming out. You got a Serbian film that came out a few years after this. And as far as the actual film itself goes, dude, there's so many visually like disturbing and it makes you just feel on edge. Like any movie that makes me feel on edge and anxious, gives me anxiety. That movie is hitting. It's hitting home. It's hitting. It's proving a point. It's making me feel as a cinema goer, as a film watcher. I'm like, wow. Like this is actually hitting me where it hurts. Like I love shit like this. And another aspect of this film that I really, really can compare to one of my favorite directors, Takashi Miike, is I had to watch this movie a couple of times to actually completely understand this film, which is pretty much every Miike film I watch. I have to watch like. Two or three times.
Even his fucking action films are so confusing.
I'm like, what the fuck is going on with this plot? And like, this was one of those movies. It wasn't as bad as a Miike film as far as like understanding wise, but it was up there. Like, I had to like really think. And any movie that makes me really think, I really feel like that movie is, it's a movie that I will revisit for one, and it always is going to hold a special place in my heart. I'll always remember that movie. Even some of Miike's films where they're just weird as fuck, and I don't even know if I'm going to revisit it. I'll always remember those movies as being a movie that made me think and kept me on my toes throughout the whole movie. It did not bore me. It made me, after the movie it got over, I was continuing to think about the plot, and I do feel like this, I'm there with Moods, it's a modern masterpiece. I feel like this film, it's one of those films when I first saw it, I was like, I'm going to suggest this movie to as many people as possible because this movie, you go from the shotgun scene to the ending scene where the chick is, she's skinned on this table with all these people watching her and listening
full
to
blown
her.
It's just a
really is, man. This movie is not only like mentally fucked, it's visually fucked. And that sounds weird, but it's a very memorable movie. So I agree. I actually gave this movie a 10 out of 10 before, anything. I've always thought this movie was a perfect movie. So yeah, 10 out of 10, definitely.
Okay. I don't know how to follow up both of those, but essentially I came in at a 9.5, but I gotta be honest, like you guys talked it up. Like before we started this podcast, I wrote down 9.5, and as we discussed it, I realized that there truly is very little wrong with this film. Maybe the believability factor, but if you put yourself in the story, if you accept the story, then it's not like it, maybe the idea that these people couldn't do this in a regular neighborhood, how hasn't the cops came already, where's the bodies going, how are they not going to be missing, maybe that's a plot hole, I don't know. But it is, when we use the word classic and modern day masterpiece and modern day classic and things, I think of like what qualifies it. And I really do. On every level, this film is interesting from the cinematic point of view, just the camera work, and we talked about the elevation with the makeup and just the chapped lips and stuff like that. But honestly, it's a story that makes you think, and it's good filmmaking. And what do I always say? I say my number one favorite thing in movies, why I do this, is because I love good filmmaking, and that's my favorite thing.
Yeah.
And this is, I don't think anybody could say that this is not good filmmaking. And it's honestly depressing that the guy hasn't really done anything else. Jesus Christ, dude, like this is an amazing movie. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to bump my rating up to where you guys are to hit a perfect 30. That is a 10 out of 10. And this film will be inducted into the 22 Shots Presents / Moods and Horror Hall of Fame as a 10 from Moods, a 10 out of 10 from me, and a 10 out of 10 from Kyle for the perfect 30.
What's funny is I actually came into this thinking that I was going to get shit for giving this movie a 10 out of 10. I was like, these guys are going to rip apart this movie, and I'm going to be sitting here like, oh, why did I give this a 10 out of 10?
He's going to be erasing his rating and shit while we're talking.
Like, I've always thought this movie was an amazing like feat of cinema for the time frame that it came out in. I mean, there wasn't really much going on in 2008, and then this movie comes out, and it's like kind of blows you away on the like disturbing slash horror genre, and you're like, wow, this is like – just kind of crazy. So
this is the perfect reason why, you know, revisiting films is such a good idea. Like I said, I hadn't seen this one in like 5 years at least. And I remember someone asking me what my ranking was on, you know, the Fab Five films. And I remember putting Martyrs in at third on that list, you know, and I hadn't seen it in a while, you know?
Yeah.
So this is a perfect example of why you do it, because just revisiting, I'm just like, holy, I just watching this movie with a different mentality, and I'm just really, you know, just examining things to a, you know, higher degree. And it's just, everything comes together.
I will say this, Booge, you examined the ending of this movie a lot more than I thought I would. And when you started kind of talking about your interpretation of the ending of this movie, like I never really thought of that.
It just all made sense
like,
all of a sudden.
Made sense to me a lot more hearing what you thought about it than to what I was kind of interpreting it. Because I was interpreting as, you know, she heard what the ending, you know, what the other side was. She killed herself and that's where she wanted to go. But the more you kind of broke it down, it makes more sense of what you'd interpret it as I did. Yeah.
And
so,
you know what, Kyle? And you didn't want him on the podcast. Jeez.
No, I never said that. You did.
Nobody wants me on their show. No, but seriously, I watched this movie late last night before I went to bed, and I got thinking about it. I was just like laying there thinking about it and stuff, and got up in the morning, went to the gym, and I was running on the elliptical, and I was thinking about this, and I just, everything was just really, really flowing. I don't know, just because, you know, I was working out and things were just kind of flowing and stuff, but I was just having these crazy ideas and things, and I'm
but
like,
that's
yep.
the film, right? That's the film. That's what makes any film that you could be thinking about at the gym the next day, those are the ones that I love, and this is why I do this. This is what I love.
It's not like going to see Jurassic World in the movie theater,
so,
and you're not thinking about dinosaurs the next fucking day, you know what I mean? Like, Jesus Christ.
But there is room for that in cinema too. Let's not front that there's not room for that type of stuff, you know, but
I mean this is a little bit different of a genre slash film, as you know, this is one of those movies that really, really get into you. I mean, not only like I said, visually you're going to remember these like gore scenes and these scenes where these dudes are being, this whole family at the beginning, the first 15 minutes of the movie, gets blown away by a shotgun. That's not something you see every day in a film, you know what I mean? Like, it's that's few and far between in movies.
You know what I've seen like about 5 or 6 times today was the little girl's eyes just open.
Oh yeah,
just kept picturing it. It sticks with you, man.
It's depressing.
yeah. So the final thing that we're gonna end here on is and I think that in this case we actually discussed a lot of what made it disturbing or what didn't make it disturbing. So instead of saying, you know, why, I think we already explained why, so I'm just gonna leave it on this, guys. The definition that I got is causing distress, worry, or anxiety. Is Martyrs disturbing? Yes or no? Moods.
Yes.
Kyle.
Yes.
Yes. All three of those I experienced.
Yeah. I mean, I started getting the first, I remember just a quick little thing here. I remember the first time, like I said, I saw this movie, seeing the visual aspect of this movie, not only just the plot, but you know, you see the kind of breaking it down. Yeah, you go from seeing this little girl being tortured to her killing an entire family to her, you know, going and
there's just,
you know,
a laundry list, right?
There's just a long list of like just visual things, and that could by itself, even though the plot's disturbing, could be why it is disturbing. I've always thought this movie was definitely should be up there on the disturbing list, if you know, an extreme list of, because you see it on every single extreme list, and it is meant to be there. So that's, I do agree with a lot of the people that say this. So
yes.
Yeah.
And any final words, gentlemen?
I mean, for me, I guess check out all of our YouTube channels. I mean, you got Mood 616, I'm the Horrorphile, Double Shot J. We upload reviews and a whole bunch of other stuff to our channels.
I'm the lone ranger left on body bags. I didn't plug that at the beginning of the of the show, but yeah, there's another YouTube channel called Body Bags. I'm like I said, the lone ranger left. These two have left, but you know, you can catch me on there also. Yeah, so.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, guys, take it from me where I say, check if for some reason you don't know who Mood 616 is, like, that's pretty crazy, but like, the guy makes some of the best videos on YouTube, and you know, Kyle, he's not good, but he's very nice. So I mean, check out his videos as well. You know, I think that this first show was a success, and what we're gonna do next is still kind of up in the air. This is like the first episode.
It's literally a pilot.
It's a pilot. So if you guys want more, I want to hear it loud. Seriously.
Yeah.
Because we won't do more unless you don't
holla at a player.
Yes. So let us know if you like this format, if you like the questions we pose, if you like the questions we answer, if you like the way we answer it, the way we talk about the movie. Let us know. That's important to us.
Yeah, and like, yeah, something else I was thinking too. I know that you guys do voicemails on the 22 Shots podcast, and I'm not saying, I mean, I know this is a pilot, but if you guys ever have any questions or anything, leave us some comments in the, you know, comment section. Maybe on, you know, when we get our iTunes feed, we'll be uploading this to our YouTube channel. Leave us some questions in the comment section if you guys have any questions about anything about the movie or anything about any of these extreme, disturbing movies in general. Just let us know. We'd be more than happy to answer some questions on the podcast for you guys as well. So,
yep. And yep, with sure, that said, I was disturbed, and I'm looking forward to being disturbed again if we come back, and when, if that happens. So yeah, awesome doing this with you guys. It was so fun.
Great.
I had so much fun with this one. I really did. So see you guys later.
Peace. Until next time, peace.